right, North South Wrestling Podcast Network. Welcome to the inaugural episode of The Year That Was. My name's Aaron, and I'm going to be taking you guys through a project that I've been doing since 2017. So we're 3 years deep into this thing. If any of you listeners have ever listened to No Holds Barred with JT and I, we often kind of branch off into these discussions about what I've been doing the past 3 years, watching every single WWF, WWE pay-per-view, and kind of trying to bring everything and put it into context. So that's what I've been doing. In 2017, at the very beginning of the year, I said, you know what? Why don't I watch 2016? I feel like I kind of watched it kind of in a haze. So I wanted to kind of see it and rank it. And when I got through it, I said, let's do the rest. And here we are, 3 years later. A lot of my life has gone into this. I feel so much dumber for having done it. My brain cells have been obliterated by Michael Cole's screeching and yelling about the numbers game. But speaking of the numbers game, in these 3 years, all of the WWF pay-per-views, there have been 2,888 matches across 395 shows. There's years I loved watching. There's years I hated watching. And it didn't always play out in the total ranking, which is what this show's going to kind of be about. We're going to start talking about what was the best pay-per-view year of wrestling? What was the worst? And the ones that I hated watching, none of them finished last, which I was very upset about. Because I based it on a few different categories, to say. And it really got me thinking about why I watch wrestling. Because I started to realize that throughout many of these, there's so much garbage that we sift through to get to the good stuff. Like, there are just incredible stretches where every show after every show is just god-awful. And yet we stick it out for these moments of absolute amazement. I think it really speaks to what wrestling does for us. It lets us escape, and it lets us kind of vicariously live through these characters as they go through these triumphs. And it's strange because I can get super emotionally invested in something, and that can last the whole year. I'm thinking specifically about 2011. I got super invested in the Summer of Punk, and I think I still watch today because of it, even though I'm sifting through years and years of garbage. So we really cling to these moments. And it's interesting because so much of it isn't great. Like, to give you some context, of the matches, I have 48% of matches that I watched in this period either boring or bad. So think about that in terms of any other show. If another show was almost 50% bad, it'd be canceled instantly. I mean, Game of Thrones had one bad season out of eight, and it's erased from the cultural zeitgeist to the point where we're like, don't watch it. Don't watch it. You don't want to see it. I mean, this guy's never going to finish the goddamn books, but it's almost like we're kind of hanging on to that. So it's really kind of interesting what we do with wrestling, because I don't think it's just me who thinks things are bad, and I also don't think everything's bad. I'm not a person who hates everything, but I'm also not one of these psychopaths who's like, everything's amazing, and every single thing is fire and great, and I just can't do it, right? So what I did was every year, I ranked every single match. So, for instance, in the year we're going to talk about today, which I am not ready to reveal just yet, the year we're going to talk about today, there are 63 matches. So I would rank them 1 to 63. And I would base almost everything of my categories on this ranking. I ranked every match star rating. To give you an idea of how I rank star ratings, I don't do it just based on work rate. I think anybody who's listened to my stuff will know this. I'm a staunch defender of Hogan Andre at 5 stars, which I know people get so angry about. But it's like, for me, I don't need him doing moonsaults. I'm good. Like I need story. I need effectiveness with the audience. I look at it in terms of a complete experience. So like Vince McMahon being carted off in a stretcher, giving the middle finger. To me, that adds like a quarter star to anything I watch, you know. So here's what I look at when I'm looking at stars. I don't do negative stars. It's 1 to 5. 0 is the worst of all time. 1, you're pretty bad. 2, you're not horrible, but it's bad enough that it's hurting the show. And see, 2.5 is my cutoff. A lot of people rank squashes at 0. For me, 2.5 is where a squash match goes. It's something that's kind of just there. It doesn't hurt the show it doesn't hurt the show or add to the show. It's just there. It's like a 50%. like in terms of an exam. And like I don't want to put a squash match too close to zero, because zero is like among the worst matches of all time. Squash match isn't close to that. It's just, that's why it's at 50%. I get it if you're doing negative stars, but for me, I don't. Three is where things start to get good. 3.5, very good. 4, great. And when you're looking at 5, you're looking at greatest of all time. Throughout the course of this project, I had 41 matches rated at 5 stars. Now, that might feel high for some. Remember, I'm working on experience. But it's only 1.4% of all the matches I watched. And I think being in the top 1% means something. Especially to all the globalists out there who are really upset about the 1% gaining all the wealth. And being in the 1% matches, you're going to see a lot of John Cena, one of the elite, probably a lot of Shawn Michaels, Reptilian. All these guys are going to be there. And the reason why I asked the question is when I was looking at it too, like I said, 48% of matches being bad or boring is not great. And so I would rank wrestlers based on that. I would take their average match ranking for the year, and that would be one category. And then I would look at their ranking and give them points. So for instance, in a 63-match year, the first match gets 63 points, the second match gets 62 match, et cetera, et cetera. But I will add bonuses for any match above 4 stars and take things away any match below 2.25 stars. And it really kind of depends on length too. So like if a 2.25 star match is like a minute long, you don't lose a lot, you know. But if it's half an hour long, you lose a lot. A 5-star match is worth more. So everything was kind of factored in. That gave me a wrestler of the year. And I did the same thing for the shows. Average star match rating versus point rating for the matches. And so that gave me a best show of the year and a worst show of the year. And that's what I did for every single year. For a wrestler, he needed to be on at least a quarter of the shows to be eligible for wrestler of the year. So like the last couple years, 2019, I hate every single Triple H match, but he's not the worst wrestler of the year. He's not on the show enough, right? But and in a year where there's only four pay-per-views or two pay-per-views, which are some of the earlier pay-per-views, they only had to be on half of them or have two matches. And that brings us to the year that was the pay-per-view years. So this is why I wanted to see what the best year in wrestling was and what the worst year in wrestling was based on pay-per-views. And I based this out on 12 different categories. Okay, the first was average star rating for all the matches that year. They are ranked 1 to 35 because there's 35 pay-per-views on that. I next went into characters. Characters being just that, characters. You'll find that in current wrestling, there's not a lot of characters. People aren't really characters anymore. This is where I kind of factored in the announcers too. Not too much, because otherwise the recent years would be destroyed. But characters kind of, you know, they're important. They tie you to the story. Like Stone Cold Steve Austin was a fantastic character. He got you into everything he did. Roman Reigns, I like him in the ring. He's not a great character. You can't really say who he is. It's if anyone's ever watched the Plinkett Star Wars reviews, he does this thing with the Star Wars prequels where he's like, tell me who a character is without telling me what their job is or what they look like. And so you could do that with Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's a rebel. He plays by his own rules. He's this, that. Roman Reigns would be like, he's got great eyes. Oh, no, that's what he looks like. He's got shiny hair. He wears a flak jacket. So you'd be hard-pressed to tell me who this guy is besides the big dog without, you know, going to his appearance. So I went into characters. Next, I rated the WrestleManias. WrestleMania is the marquee show of the year, so that matters. It's worth 1/12 of the points. And then I got a bunch of categories on storylines, because I think storylines are the most important thing in wrestling. And that's actually it's an indictment of the current product as well. But I have a category for world title level storylines, mid-card storylines, tag team storylines, and women's storylines. So, and any time that, for instance, there wasn't something in that year, for instance, in 1991, there was no women's storylines, I put everybody who didn't participate at the median in the middle, and they got points in the middle. They didn't get punished, they didn't get hurt either, punished or rewarded either. Next category is Royal Rumble match. I think Royal Rumble match kind of sets the tone for the year a lot of the years, and it becomes one of the more memorable things of the year. Historical importance, we ranked that on a recent episode of No Holds Barred, which was cool. SummerSlam, which became the second most important pay-per-view of the year. Everything's ranked by then. And then finally, they got bonuses for matches that are 4+ stars throughout the year and penalized for matches that are 1 star or minus throughout the year. And just to give you guys a heads up, the most of these are based on my own tabulations. However, the WrestleMania rankings and the historical importance, what JT and I did on No Holds Barred, I used that for the rankings in this project. And when I grouped it all together, it gives you a list of 35 years of pay-per-views. And let me tell you something, it was close. The number one won pretty handily. However, everything else was very close. Sometimes within, like, if just a show had been a little bit, one show had been a little bit better in the year, it would have gone up or down, or if show was worse. Which brings us to the worst pay-per-view year of all time. And it hurts, because I actually liked watching this year. I didn't dislike it. It was okay to watch. But the worst pay-per-view year of all time, based on my categories, and only mine, was 1995. 1995 is an interesting year, all right? And let me just preface off the start, too. I think this is stupid, but these are my opinions. I don't think you're stupid if you don't agree with me. If you think I'm stupid because I don't agree with you, you're stupid. And I've used the word stupid too many times now, so I'm going to move on. 1995 is, to me, the worst pay-per-view year of all time. And I think it's got three really interesting through lines. The first being the misuse of Bret Hart. I've never been the biggest Bret Hart fan. But when I look at this year and when I look at what they've given him to do throughout the year, man, the year could have been a lot better if he was in a more prominent position on the card. The second most, the second through line is Diesel's opponents once Shawn Michaels turns. I think he gets a bit unfairly maligned, and we'll get to that as we go. And then finally, The Undertaker having one of the worst years of all time on pay-per-view. It's not only his fault, but it has a lot to do with his opponents, and we'll see that as we go. So for match quality, I had this as the 33rd year out of 35. And I think because of that, because it has great high-end stuff, but so much garbage. It's got way too much garbage, okay? Now, if you remember, my cutoff for good matches is 3 stars, okay? In this year, I have 24 of the 63 matches as good, okay? That comes to 38%. That's not good, all right? That's 62% of the time you're either bored or thinking it's actively bad. It's got the most 1¾-star matches. But I want to talk to you about the good, okay? The good matches, because there are some good matches. The top 5 matches of the year for me were, at number 5, Diesel Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania, which I think is not, it's not a great match, but I think it's strong. It's an indictment of the year that the number 5 match is not a great match, but I think it's a nice, strong match. It's a good main event. And I think both guys come off looking well because of it. Number 4, Jeff Jarrett and Shawn Michaels from In Your House 2. Great sprint. I kind of wanted to rank it higher upon when I was going into the project. But I think it's really good. It's Jeff Jarrett's best match of all time. It's Shawn Michaels, like, I don't know, 40th best match of all time. But it's a great match, and it's fun to watch still today. Number 3, Diesel Bret Hart from Survivor Series 95. Get that great table spot. You got the cool ending. Number 2, Bret Hart versus Davey Boy Smith from In Your House, Season's Beatings. I know this is a match that JT's super high on. I liked it also as well. Number 2 match of the year. And the number 1 match from SummerSlam 95, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon in the ladder match. Just a fantastic match start to finish. I don't love the ending. I think it's a little botched, which is why I can't go full Monty on it. But I think it's a worthy match of the year. It'd be a match of the year in a few other years too. It's interesting to note for me, of all the great matches I watched in this 2,888, I have 285 of them as great, which is a little over 10%. But this match, the ladder match, ranks 143rd. It's my 143rd best match on pay-per-view. And the worst match of the year was a deplorable Mabel versus Savio Vega from The King of the Ring. I have it at 0.5 star. It's only 9 minutes. It's not super long, but it's just such an indictment of that whole show. It's lethargic. It's boring. And I have it as the 42nd worst match of all time. Characters. I have it as 31st out of 35. And it's just because there's good characters, but there's bad characters. For every Bret Hart, there's an Isaac Yankem ruining the show, right? And I think feuds kind of fall in here, too. One of the better feuds of the year, I think, was LT Bam Bam Bigelow. I thought it actually had some oomph to it in terms of people who clearly don't like each other. I think that was a rare thing to go throughout the year. I think one of the low-key feuds of the year was Bret Hart and Diesel, but it kind of like sandwiched the year almost. But it was also not really a feud based on hatred or anything. It was just based on mutual respect, which can work, but it's hard to have a great feud based on mutual respect. You have can have a great series of matches, but a great feud is a bit hard. And I think the characters get hurt a little bit here because the commentary. I think Vince and King just don't really mesh together that well. I think it's because Vince is not a great improviser. You know, to be a great improviser, you kind of have to put yourself on the back seat a little bit too. You have to look a little weak at times. And I don't know if Vince is always great at that. He's good at pushback, but it's like King will make a joke and Vince can't go with it. Instead, he'll just kind of, all right, and move along and anything can happen, you know? So, I think that's where it gets hurt with characters. Now, WrestleMania, JT and I had it ranked 32 out of 35. So, a pretty low WrestleMania. I'm sure it hurt his heart to rank it that low. I know he likes it. But I think what hurts this WrestleMania is it's really killed by The Undertaker and King Kong Bundy and Bret Hart and Bob Backlund. Bret Hart, Bob Backlund is just awful, right? Just an awful, awful match. What do you say? What do you say? I don't know why Rowdy Piper had to scream. I don't know why he's wearing jeans. I don't know why he came back to do this. He could have stayed home. It would have been fine. We didn't need him there. We didn't need Bret Hart fighting Backlund here. And it's these two matches that really bring the card to a halt. I think the main event is fun, and I think Diesel and Shawn Michaels is good. But nothing feels like WrestleMania with it. And I think that hurts the show, that nothing feels like WrestleMania. It feels like a decent show with a couple of bad matches on it. Now we get to the world title storyline. I have it 29th out of 35. And let's face it, this is where Diesel and his opponents really becomes a problem. He spends the year feuding with potentially the saddest stable of all time. I don't know what made Ted DiBiase so sad. Clearly he wasn't comforted by his millions of dollars anymore. But the man just looks depressed at every single turn. And it might be because he's surrounding himself with the biggest collection of fucking losers in the world. When your top guy is Tatanka for a while, I get why you're sad, okay? And all the money in the world should be able to buy you a better friend than Tatanka, all right? Or scent on his tights Nikolai Volkov, all right? That pasty motherfucker is just a walking bag of depression, all right? Now, he gets Sid, which is cool. All right, I love Sid, but Sid's having a pretty rough year this year, all right? And it goes to speaks to Diesel's opponents after Shawn Michaels, right? So he's at the beginning of the year, he's with Shawn, and it's good. And then he's with Brett, too, at the beginning and the end, and it's great. These are great things. But this amounts to the very small percentage of the year. He spends the rest of the year feuding with Sid, Tatanka, Davey Boy Smith, who was not a good match with Sid, and, of course, one of the men responsible for destroying this year and probably destroying many toilets, Mabel. And it's not a good fit. It's not good challengers for him. I would liken him to the Ultimate Warrior in that aspect. I never thought it was Ultimate Warrior's fault that he was kind of saddled with bad challengers after WrestleMania 6. And I don't know if it's necessarily Diesel's fault that he's saddled with these guys too. Now, it doesn't help that Diesel's not a human being during this year. He's like a corporate machine just spouting out catchphrases and smiling. And I mean, they're putting him everywhere, but he's just this cool dude leaning on a ladder, you know, telling you, giving you life lessons as though he's your big brother, you know. Like, he might have well been saying cowabunga dude, you know, and just kind of like, you know, hey, man, you know, it is what it is. Sometimes Shawn Michaels is my friend. Sometimes he's not. What can I do? Hey, Todd Pettengill, we're going to go down and hang out at the mall. I'm going to get something at Griffin Graph. That's a store in Quebec that sells art supplies. Nobody knows what that is. Oh, yeah. What I noticed with Diesel this time is it feels like it's the first time they try the mega babyface who isn't affected by anything, and he's put atop the promotion. So, like, Hogan was affected by stuff. You know, Warrior was affected by stuff. God, he threw up because of Papa Shango. Savage was affected by everything because he was a psychotic, you know. Diesel is too laid back for anything, and unfortunately they don't learn from this mistake. This is the prototype of all the top faces today, so this is why you got Cena, this is why you got Roman Reigns, like, smiling and looking. It starts here, and I don't understand that they don't learn the lesson from this colossal failure of a title reign. And when does he become interesting again, Diesel? It's interesting. It's as soon as he loses, and he gets pissed, and he starts getting angry. You know, and at the beginning of the year with the world title, they go back to Brett, and everything feels right in the world. He and Bulldog tear down the house and in your house, because it becomes a personal story about human beings, as opposed to a fucking robot truck. You know, like you can yell all about the promotion running on diesel power, but nobody uses diesel power. Nobody, not even then. Nobody cared. I had a friend who had a diesel car. We all thought he was a fucking loser until he showed us his gas bill, and then we all worshipped him. But no one's using diesel power. You're the outlier. If you're using diesel, you're driving a Nazi Volkswagen. Mid-card stereo storyline, 23rd out of 25. And I think the first half is dominated by Jarrett in good matches, but nothing really great storyline. But then it becomes Sean-centric, and then everything gets better, right? Culminates with the best match with Razor. And, I mean, you got some interesting things going on in the mid-card, too, in terms of you get the Horowitz storyline with Skip. I think I think SummerSlam would have been helped by Skip losing there as opposed to on Superstars or whatever the fuck it was. And you got a great debut. My man, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Triple H. Doesn't have a great year. Not really doing much. I wish that, I mean, he's fighting Fatu, trying to make a difference. I wish Fatu would have made a difference by marrying Stephanie instead. Maybe not here. I don't want to speak to any sort of children marriages or arranged marriages, but how did Vince not marry his daughter to a Samoan? I mean, I bet if The Rock would have asked for Stephanie's hand, Triple H would have been murdered. He would have been Jeffrey Epstein, if you know what I mean. Jeffrey Epstein, he was killed in a... he committed suicide, but he was killed in a prison with the Wakandans. And, you know, the Wakandans have a metal they bury in the earth. It's called vibranium. And it's just great for everything. Now, Bret Hart is also in the mid-card for most of the year. And he's fighting terrible opponents. This goes to his misuse. I mean, he's fighting Bob Backlund. Too late. We don't need to see him fighting Backlund anymore. He's fighting Lawler, which, I mean, the matches are fine, but we're done with the Lawler feud by now. And he's fighting Isaac Yank. I mean, he's fighting Jean-Pierre Lafitte. He's fighting a fucking pirate instead of wrestling. Imagine a wrestler having to fight a pirate. He's the wrestler. Have him fight wrestlers instead of pirates and dentists and tattooed ninjas and kings and old psychopaths. Can he wrestle wrestling matches? It's terrible stories, but for the most part, he pulls it out and makes most of the matches watchable. And he even gets hung in one of them. So thank you, Bret Hart, for making the mid-card salvageable. We also get Goldust. Great intro, but not great in-ring. He's fighting a demoted Bam Bam Bigelow. Another sad guy. There's a lot of sadness in 1995. You got sad Ted DiBiase. You got sad Bam Bam Bigelow. You got sad Skip. I mean, Skip's banging Sonny and he's sad. What's his problem? Lighten up, Skip. All right. Tag team storylines. I don't think there's much going on. I have it 26 out of 35 because there's some years where they just don't give a shit about the tag teams. Now, at least here, you get the Owen Hart surprise at WrestleMania. Smoking Guns have a decent year. Two Dudes with Attitudes winning. It's just a for the whole year. All right. Women's storyline. Now, a lot of years, they just don't have any women's storylines or the women's storyline is terrible. So this gets 8 out of 29. I think it's really helped by the Joshi arrival at Survivor Series 95. You got Asuka's mother in there and a bunch of other lovely Japanese women. And you also got Aja Kong, who I absolutely love. And it's such a shame that Alundra Blaze left before she got to fight Aja Kong and Watanabe. And she's also hurt by the Birth of Faith storyline, which is horrible. But at least there's some focus on it, so I think it's not the worst thing. Next category is Royal Rumble match. I have it 32nd out of 33. I think it's the worst Royal Rumble match that isn't just a total fuck you to the audience, which should give you a spoiler as to what the worst Royal Rumble match of all time is. I think Shawn Michaels and the British Bulldog are having a fine wrestling match with a bunch of jobbers jumping in and out of the ring. There's just nothing going on here. Doink getting kicked in the face by Quang is the highlight. Imagine, that's the highlight. Well, I guess the end is the highlight, but I like Doink getting hurt. Like, Doink getting badly hurt. You know, if they want to do one of these cinematic matches... I think they should do one with Doink where he's just being fucking pounded. His face is being pounded into dust. I think everyone could use a good laugh, you know? And it's one of these Royal Rumbles where you're watching, like, and you're almost thankful that there's no music in this one. They start that the next year because the music would be, you'd be like, who, what? Whose music is this? And every entrance is perpetual disappointment. You get Jacob Blue, you get Eli Blue. You get Timothy Well, you get Stephen Dunn. It's just a nonstop array of people who aren't important. Now, this show needed people to be brought in from the mid-card, but they didn't. The biggest pop in the Royal Rumble is Bret the Hitman Hart, and he's not even in the goddamn match, right? And that's just upsetting to a degree that I can't even describe. Owen Hart and Bob Backlund are sacrificed to the Bret Hart storyline. They need They need these people in the match, right? I went to Wikipedia just to take a look, and you know what the picture I saw was? Sad Ted DiBiase. And that just sums up the entire match. Poor, sad, rich Ted DiBiase. Virgil left him. Sherry left him. Fucking coked out on drugs, but it's not bringing him happiness. That's what this match is, right? It's an uninteresting mess. But the most uninterested person in the match, Pamela Anderson, who had to sit there and look impressed, and then you know Shawn Michaels wanted to throw her down like he threw Sherry down, but fuck, he would have been sued. Tommy Lee would have gotten his ass kicked by Shawn Michaels. Yeah, I think Shawn Michaels could have probably beaten up all of Motley Crue at once. Terrible Royal Rumble. We had it historically pretty significant, 21st out of 35. I'll let you listen to Little Holds Barred for that. And the SummerSlam, 31st out of 33. I don't think it's the worst thing, but it's nothing. It's got that great main. It's got that ladder match. Diesel Mabel is a terrible main event. It's not the worst thing. And then you got Taker against Kama, which is god awful. So based on all those categories, it ended up finishing 35th out of 35. Let me talk a little bit about the best show of the year, which I thought was the 1995 Survivor Series. I think it's a really cool show. I think it holds up really well. Of the 395 shows, just in terms of star rating, I didn't factor in great matches or anything, which would change it. But it ranks 143rd out of 395. I think it's got a really great main event, and I think everything else is really good on it. The wild card match is fun. The Joshi match is fun. The underdog match is really fun. I think these Survivor Series matches are usually pretty great. Like, not great. I think they're usually very good, good, very good. It's hard to mess them up. So everything is good on Survivor Series 95, except the Undertaker match. Undertaker, Savio Vega, Henry Godwin, and Fatu. Look, I know it's your friends, but you can't do this. You can't have this team, okay? It's versus Mabel, Jerry Lawler, Triple H, and Isaac Yankum. Yeah, I don't want to put it all on Undertaker, but great workers like Triple H are on that other team. Jerry Lawler, best of all time in some mind. Anyway, Survivor Series, best show of the year. Brings us to the worst show of the year. And my vote for the worst show of all time, King of the Ring 1995. Imagine you get tickets to King of the Ring. Good roster, right? You got Diesel, Bret Hart, Sid. Sid's back, right? Well, maybe it's just me, Sid. Diesel, Bret Hart, Sid, Razor Ramon, right? And you hear that in the tournament, Undertaker and Shawn Michaels are in it. It's going to be a good show. In Philadelphia, oh my goodness, it's going to be an amazing show. And you're watching this thing, and Undertaker loses to Mabel. You're like, okay, all right, great. Mabel, fine. All right, they want to feed Mabel to Michaels. And Michaels can't beat Kama, the Supreme Fighting Machine. Which is just depressing. How can Michaels not beat Kama? The semifinal is Savio Vega versus the Roadie. Who is Savio Vega? Who cares? The best match is Bret Hart and Jerry Lawler in maybe their worst match. The main event is garbage. It's Tatanka and Sid against Diesel and Sad Bam Bam Bigelow. The man is depressed. It's got the worst match of the year. It's just lethargic, and it's shit all over by the crowd, and it gave you a King of the Ring that nobody wanted, nobody cared, and was just a terrible, terrible choice. Mabel is a giant purple grape, all right, and nobody wants to see a giant purple grape lumber around the ring and potentially die of a heart attack. Nobody wants it. Nobody wants the heart attack. Nobody wants the diabetes. No one wants Mabel. All right? Bottom five wrestlers of the year. I'm going to do top five and bottom five, and we're out of here. Bottom five wrestlers of the year. Number five, Hunter Hearst Helmsley. Look, he's just boring. All right? He's just boring. Okay? He fights Bob Holly. He fights Fatu. He fights Henry Godwin in a hog pen match. The narrative that was shown a few years ago, where like Nash and Razor were like, man, we were watching Terror Rising matches, and you know, hey, but we were watching Terror Rising matches. That terrible Razor Ramon, but they're talking about watching terrible Terror Rising matches, and thinking like, this guy's the guy, man. This guy's the guy. No way. You're full of shit, Razor. I don't want to call you a liar, Kevin Nash, but you're a liar. You didn't care about Triple H and WCW, okay? I don't even know if you cared about him now. You probably treated him like shit, made him carry your bags, and he was probably so tired from carrying your bags and all your drugs and your world title that he just couldn't bring it in any of these matches, okay? But he did manage to charm the boss's daughter later. Number four, worst mat wrestler of the year, Henry O. Godwin. Ugh, who cares? He fights Sid. What a weird match, Sid against Henry Godwin. A strange feud. Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Bam Bam Bigelow, and he's in that Taker Survivors team. You know, he probably deserves to be lower. Third worst wrestler of the year. I can't believe he's not higher. Mabel. All right, I think it's just because he's just there. His matches are short. He's a grape. Sir Mo makes me upset because he's not wearing purple too. I would like two grapes. If I'm going to have grape, you don't have one grape, you have two grapes. Second worst rest of the year, Savio Vega. I think he's just really here because he gets lumped in for that awful King of the Ring tournament. He also fights Waylon Mercy. I like Waylon Mercy's character, but it's not a good match. And he's in a terrible team against Razor and the Men on a Mission, and they're not even rapping, so I don't even know why you'd want to watch them. And the worst wrestler of 1995, The Undertaker. Look, he's got six matches, nothing above two stars. He fights IRS. Ah, fuck IRS. I hate IRS so much. You know, like, people are surprised that Bray Wyatt is not good in the ring. Look, these things are genetic, okay? They're genetic, okay? IRS sucked. Bray Wyatt sucks. It's what it is. He's fighting Kama. He's fighting King Kong Bundy, and he's spending the year fighting Mabel. He's got two matches with Mabel. We didn't need one match with Undertaker and Mabel. We got two. Okay? Losing the King of the Ring gets his revenge. Who cares? All right? He got three because he's in that Survivor Series team. Let's end on some good stuff, all right? Let's talk about the five best wrestlers of the year 1995. Number five, the 1-2-3 Kid. I like his year. He's got some good tag team stuff at the start. He's got a solid match with Hakushi, which is a really kind of underrated Oprah in Survivor Series 95. He's got a good match with the Roadie, of all people, which does the ends of that top rope pile driver, which I can't believe he didn't have his neck broken. And then he turns heel, and I think he's really fun in that Underdog Survivor Series match. And he's good in tags with Razor when they're fighting the Guns, but terrible in tags against Razor when he's teaming with Sid. Yeah, he's good in both of those. Razor's teaming with Jannetty at that point. I don't understand why Jannetty couldn't be given that Savio Vega role. Why do we need to bring in a Caribbean legend? You know, oh, Canadian legend Bill Durnham. That's not even you. It's like something you've never heard of. A legend we've heard of. Greek legend Hercules. American legend Donald Trump. Chinese legend Mao Zedong. All of these are legends, all right? Savio Vega is not a legend, and he's not dressed like a legend. He's wearing slacks and a red shirt. That's not a legend. Legends don't wear that start. Otherwise, Chainsaw Charlie would be a legend. Fourth best wrestler of 1995, JEFFJARRET. I think it's entirely on his match with Shawn Michaels. I think his matches with Razor are fine. They're good, and I think he doesn't really have anything bad. I hate Jarrett. I hate those suspenders. I hate his face. I hate his hair. I don't hate him personally. I don't know him personally. I bet he's a nice man, but fourth best wrestler in 1995. Number three, Bret the Hitman Hart. Making chicken salad out of chicken shit all year. I talked about his great matches with Diesel and Bulldog. Number two, best wrestler in 1995, Razor Ramon. I think he's helped here. He wrestled the most matches of the year. He had the match of the year. His low point was wrestling with Dean Douglas. Who'd want to wrestle? If you wrestled your principal, it wouldn't be a good match either. If I wrestled Mr. Leggett, I mean, that guy hated me. He had an amazing beard. But he hated me. And at the time, I wish I would have kicked his ass, but he would have just squashed me like a bug. He would have just, you know, it'd be like Barry Horowitz beating Skip if I managed to pull one out against Mr. Leggett. And the best wrestler of 1995, hands down, it's Shawn Michaels. He goes on quite a streak here of great years. He has the match of the year, great match with Jarrett, solid WrestleMania match with Diesel. He's got three of the top five matches. The only bad match against Kama, which he should have won. But yeah, just a really, really good year out of Shawn Michaels. So that's our top five wrestlers of the year. And let's wrap it up here. It hurt me to put this in the last. It made me think I'll be honest, the system I'm using is obviously flawed. There's no perfect system for ranking these things. But, you know, I'm going to go with it. I'm going to see where it brings me. Just a good year, good excuse to talk about all these years and what I think of them. It hurt to put it last. I think it's really hurt by it has a bad Mania, a bad SummerSlam, and a bad Royal Rumble. And if even one of those was just a middle-of-the-road Royal Rumble, Mania, or SummerSlam, it wouldn't have finished last. It wouldn't even finish second to last. Like I said, everything was really close, right? So it's like a series of mistakes. It's not using Bret, it's Diesel having bad opponents, and Undertaker stinking up the joint. It has the worst pay-per-view of all time. And I mean, how do you? Why didn't they invite Art Donovan back for 1995 King of the Ring? You imagine how excited this man would be to call a Mabel match. You know, hey, who's the grape running around? How much that fell away? He'd be so happy. Who's that guy? Who's this guy? He'd have all new guys to ask about, and all the guys that he forgot about from the year before. He would have really helped this pay-per-view. There's no way it would have finished last. It's got the worst stuff. It doesn't really have anything that brings it up. 1995, 35 out of 35. So check out all the great content we got on the North South Wrestling Podcast Network, including Extreme Three-Way Dance, Chad Campbell's The Fighting Spirit of 06. I don't know where 06 will finish. Probably pretty decently. Jacob Williams' Ruthlessly Aggressive Podcast, Jeff Learns Wrestling, JT and I's No Holds Barred, Wrestling Warzone, and check out all the pod blasts that are coming out. We're trying to bring up a lot of content for you guys, especially during these trying times. Subscribe, give us a rating, let us know what you think. Thanks for listening. I'm Aaron. You can find me, Aaron D. George, on Twitter. Help me up. It's at Aaron D. George on Twitter. Hit me up with any comments, feedback. Hit me up on any groups. Just hit me up. I'll be happy to debate any of this with you. This was the year that was 1995. Next time, we look at a year I really hated. And it was awful to sit through. See you then.